I thought I'd touch on a few things that lead into the fifth skanda that I was going to say when we had our Wi-Fi issue in the beginning. They connect up with the fifth one. So just some of the introductory stuff maybe makes more sense now. And I just wanted to say that, as you may have sort of figured out, these five aggregates are, they're one of the most unique parts of the Buddha Dharma, the way the Buddha saw these. And also, they're one of the most transformational. And they directly take us to this understanding of self or not self. You know, it's really this whole arena of not self or emptiness that is difficult. It's counterintuitive. It's a big leap for a lot of people. And working with these skandhas, they take us there. And people in the breakout groups have said different things where, oh, I saw this little part of me that was, I thought this was me, and then I realized it wasn't. You know, I thought this was who I was, and then I realized it wasn't. You just keep doing that, and you slowly dismantle this big architecture of selfness that conditions how we navigate the world and our own interior universe. So it's really, we entitled this retreat Unpacking the Self, because this isn't just theory, it's really about our lives. And whatever way this works for you, you know, the more we can unpack our stickiness of self, the freer we are, because we're not doing stuff compulsively, we're not doing stuff because of conditioning, we're doing stuff because we choose. Maybe out of love and compassion, but we choose. And, you know, the more our actions and thoughts are dictated by a sticky sense of self, the more difficult life is for us, for one thing. So freedom from that is helpful for us, brings happiness, brings equanimity, and also for those around us. Because, you know, we may have noticed that the people with whom we are the closest, that we love the most, are the very people upon whom we act out our conditionings. So the more that we can see through those and be free of those, the kinder we are to the people around us. So this is way useful. Not to mention, if we're in any way in any position of power over other persons, because we know we look at people in positions of power, politically in particular, and we see them just acting out on a world stage, you know, stuff they should have figured out 30 years ago, we see how important this is. So it's important. The Buddha said, referring to the path of awakening, but in the context of these five aggregates, he said, the Noble Eightfold Path is to be developed for direct knowledge of these five aggregates, subject to clinging, for the full understanding of them, for their utter destruction, for their abandoning. So here he's linking understanding, realizing the five aggregates to the path of awakening. Just a direct link there. And when the Buddha, as many of you know, was, in a sense, a poet, because he used all kinds of similes and metaphors that are just amazing. And in terms of the five aggregates, he used these very interesting similes, which will connect with the last talk on consciousness. He said that the skanda of body is like a lump of froth, and the vedanas are like water bubbles, and perception is like a mirage. Mental formations are like a banana palm trunk, insofar as it has no core, and consciousness is like a trick or a magician. So what's interesting there in terms of consciousness is that that's the only of those five, all of the first four are sort of natural things. The fifth one is this magician, this trickster, sort of. It has a sense of a conscious act and a sense of how elusive this fifth skanda is to have any sense of what it's about. So it's simultaneously the most elusive of the five skandhas, and because of that, has a significant importance, because if we can start to crack the code, then it really helps us move forward. And it's very, very linked to the sense of I. You know, all these are linked to the sense of I. The consciousness gets really subtle. So there's this, you know, there's this question of, for one thing, how do we create a sense of self around consciousness? And secondly, how do we utilize mindfulness in this context to free ourselves? And complicating this question is, what do we mean by the English word consciousness in this case? And this is where it gets a tiny bit tricky, being English-speaking persons waiting in sort of exploring Buddha Dharma. And so in this particular case, in the suttas, which is the teachings of the Buddha, in this Viskanda, there's this word, vijnana, is the word for consciousness that's being used. Vijnana. It's just a Pali word. Pali is what the suttas were originally written in. And vijnana is interesting. It's kind of it refers to a function of mind. It's sort of a division between that which knows and that which is knowing, or rather between the knowing and that which is known. It's a function. It's conscious of, you might say. It's a good way to get at it. Conscious of something. So we've been talking about conscious of body, conscious of vednas, conscious of perception. So it's conscious of. And it's worth repeating that the six sense stores in Buddha Dharma are body, tongue, eye, nose, ear, and mind. So in this case, consciousness includes being conscious of what's arising in these sense doors, including what's arising in mind. But it's relevant, I think, to touch a little bit on what vinaya is not, to not get confused by overlays of definition. And this is I'm no Buddha. I'm a friend on the path with y'all. So I'm learning some of these things, and 2 years from now, I may see it a little differently. So whatever I said, I apologize for any mistakes, but I think I've got this pretty dialed in. Because this gets real tricky, especially around these words of consciousness and awareness and mind and words like that in Buddha Dharma, especially when we're here in the West. It'd be a lot simpler if we were just all Thai people, you know. Living in Thailand, it'd be a lot simpler, but here in the West, you've got all kinds of inputs from all kinds of different traditions, and these particular subtle words get really, really tricky, because we're probably reading, some of us may be reading different Buddhist books, and there's stuff that comes out of Pali and Sanskrit and Tibetan and Thai being looked at in different ways. So consciousness in this vinaya word, two things it's not. It's not mindfulness. Mindfulness is sati. Mindfulness is sati. This consciousness is just the reflexive, conscious of something. Sati is being aware of something arising. Sounds kind of similar, but it's pretty different, very different. Sati is what we cultivate to be aware of something different. Now, I'll touch on this a little bit further on. But in a sense, you know, if you look at going through life, going through a half an hour, we live in a constant stream of consciousness. Poop, 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 all these things are happening. That's how we navigate the world. Everything's happening. We're not necessarily mindful of all that, but we are being conscious of all that. That's how we function as beings. It's thoughts and feelings and all this stuff. But, you know, if we're a really good meditator, we're mindful of all that. But if we're not, it's still happening. There's still consciousness happening. If a baseball comes at us, we duck. If someone says something negative, you know, we react even if we weren't mindful of that happening. And also, and this gets a little tricky, but consciousness in this case isn't, it's easy to slide into thinking consciousness means some kind of like great cosmic, you know, Godhead or something. Or to skid into these areas, especially learning about Buddha Dhamma in a Judeo-Christian heritage. But it's really functional in this case. It's very functional. Just conscious of is what it is in this context. So all of us are, as I said, consciousness is continually happening, but we're not necessarily mindful of it. And that's where practicing mindfulness with the fifth skanda comes in, to cultivate mindfulness of these moments of consciousness. And it's you know, value neutral, just conscious of. But because we're not mindful of it, it's easy to hold this conscious of as me, to think, oh, I am conscious of. I mean, we're more likely to do that than with any of the first four. We're more likely to say, oh, conscious of means I am conscious of, and concretize there. And that's why it's the subtlest one. Because, you know, most of us don't actually think we're a body. We sort of inhabit a body to some degree. Or if the Vedanas arrives, you know, we may identify with it, but not so solidly. But consciousness, that's tricky. To be able to be aware, to see consciousness, conscious of happening, and not think it's me being conscious. That's a big unwinding. Which you can only see in practice. You know, I can't tell you. You got to see it. But that's a place where mindfulness really does its work. And so that's why it's a real important place to bring mindfulness to, is this consciousness. It's easy to make it us. And an example, René Descartes, famous French philosopher, I think, therefore I am. You know, a Buddhist point of view thinks that's actually incorrect. He's sort of, conventionally speaking, okay, that's true. Ultimately speaking, not. And so this is a significant opening area, Andrea Fella, very skillful teacher, teaches with Gil Fronsdahl in California. Well, he's in California. I don't know where she is. Can't make any assumptions about locale anymore, but she's great. And she gave in a talk about this skanda, and the ease of identifying with consciousness of personifying it, she says, it feels like it's happening to me. It's a key way of identifying with consciousness. We don't take it as a process, but rather me. I am the one experiencing these things. So if consciousness is happening, which it is, we can easily conclude, which most people do, that there's a me, exercising consciousness. And that's, you know, conventionally speaking, sure, that's true, I'm Steve. But ultimately speaking, when you start to really look into it, then the card starts to come apart. You can't find the me. I mean, you have to try this out. Do this in your practice. Keep looking, and see what you see. But you can't find the me. And it's this very, from a Buddhist point of view, it's this very confusion about positing a sense of self onto the act of being conscious that gets us into trouble and in particular brings suffering. Because we think there's an I doing all this stuff, and since all this stuff is unsatisfactory, you know, doesn't bring happiness all the time, things are good, things are bad, we get old, we get die, all that stuff. If we identify it, then it doesn't work out so well. But as we develop mindfulness, you start to see that things are arising and passing in terms of conscious of, but that there's no I watching that. There's just things arising and passing. There's just awareness happening. But it really entangles things. And this is, you know, one of the most difficult misapprehensions to see through. So we just have to keep bringing our mindfulness to these arising. That's why this is called insight meditation. And so every time we're conscious of something, just keep being aware of that. Just keep being aware of that and see what you see. See how it untangles your sense of entangledness.